Welcome back to TRP.
The Kachina Doll by James W. Corcoran. Money was running low, so Rory needed to get back to New York on the cheap, catch his flight to Dublin and begin his final year at Trinity. So, volunteering to drive a rent-a-car back to the East Coast seemed like the ideal solution. Not only would he get to see some of Middle America, but he could save money into the bargain. All had been arranged when, out of the blue, Sonny stepped in at the last moment and offered him $500 cash, along with expenses to drive his brother's car to New Jersey with a kit of drums. Sonny was a small, wiry guy, more intriguing than attractive, yet infectious and charming. He claimed a German-Hungarian-Chinese bloodline, but only the latter was apparent. Rory didn't feel right about taking his money, but Sonny insisted, patting him on the back and saying, "I trust you, dude. You'll be doing me a big favor. There are not many cats out there that I trust with my drums, or my woman for that matter. You know what I'm saying?" Rory smiled a little awkwardly. He wished Sonny had mentioned it sooner. Now he had to go to the hassle of cancelling his rent-a-car trip at the last moment. "What do you say, man?" "Well," said Rory a little hesitantly, "if you really want me to do it, I will." "Cool, man. You'll have to toss your stuff in the back seat. I've already packed the drums in the trunk." "That's not a problem," said Rory. That evening, Rory took a taxi to Sonny's, a leafy suburb in the Mission Bay area of San Diego. Sonny raised the garage door and reversed a scuffed old Dodge Charger out onto the driveway. Rory's heart sank. It wasn't what he had expected, and suddenly the idea of a rental car seemed so clever. "I know it don't look much," said Sonny, "but I swear to God there's a beast beneath that hood. You're used to a stick shift, ain't you?" "Yeah, of course, everybody drives them at home." Rory cast a skeptical eye over the car. "What year is it?" 1977, said Sonny, stepping out of the car and patting the bonnet. "I know what you're thinking. It looks like a crock of shit, but believe you me, you won't have a moment's bother with it." "I believe you. By the way, where's the release for the gas tank?" "Just beneath the dash, but hey, you won't have to worry your head about that right now, because it's full to the brim." Sonny opened the passenger door of the car and placed Rory's rucksack inside. A small, carved Kachina doll fell from the bag onto the seat. Sonny picked it up. "Keicho gave it to me," said Rory. "She said it would bring me good luck." Sonny held the cottonwood figure in his hand for some moments, admiring the intricacy of the work. "She told me her grandfather carved it for her when she was just a small child." "Yeah, she told me about her grandfather when she gave it to me too." "Well, man," said Sonny, raising an eyebrow, "you must have created quite an impression on her." "You're a lucky man, Sonny. She's a wonderful girl." His smile was labored as he placed the doll back on the seat. "Hell, don't I know. Where is she? I thought I might get to see her before I left." "Ah, gee, she had to leave suddenly yesterday morning. Got news her mother had taken a bad turn." "What a shame. Tell her I said goodbye." "Thanks again for everything," said Sonny, his voice tapering off. "Hey, it's no big deal, man. What are friends for?" Sonny opened his wallet and counted out $1,200 in crisp $100 bills. Rory felt a little embarrassed taking it. "Don't be stupid. You'll need every last cent for the gas and motels." Rory embraced them. "Thanks, mate. Hey, if you guys ever get over to Europe, look me up." Sonny's eyes welled with tears. "We will do," he said, turning away. Rory sat into the car and turned the key. The engine growled into life. "Have a safe journey," shouted Sonny, stepping onto the porch. Rory reversed onto the street, waved through the window and drove away. They had met at Digital Enterprise Incorporated, a company specializing in surveillance equipment, where Rory was doing summer work on a J-1 visa. Sonny was a wizard at computers, a bit of a technophile really, who simply loved to possess the latest gizmos. Outside working hours, he played drums in a jazz rock outfit, Speakeasy. He was a little crazy, like most drummers, but a sweet person when you got to know him. As was his girlfriend, Kicho. She was stunning, tall, elegant, with long, shiny black hair, brown almond eyes, and flawless tan skin. "I'm the only true American amongst the lot of you," she would joke when in company. Mostly, she was right. Not many could claim to be a true descendant of the Hopi Indian. Often, when the group was gigging, she and Rory would watch a performance together, and when the band were out of town, he and Kicho would sometimes take in a movie or a show. In the last 10 weeks, they had become close friends. She liked his Irish charm. He liked her laid-back manner. She reminded him of the Irish contribution to the building of America. He reminded her it was the Hopi Indians who had sent grain to the starving Irish people during the famine years. It was a mutual admiration society. There was a bond between them, even before they met. Rory found it odd. He couldn't ever recall Kicho mentioning her mother. He assumed she had passed away or there were some family issues, but he had never ventured to ask. He was sad not to have seen her before he left and disappointed she had not texted or called to say goodbye. Perhaps, like him, she wasn't very good at goodbyes. Rory had never seen rain like it before. All the more bizarre as he was now driving through the middle of the Arizona desert, a spot he associated more with drought than with deluge. Despite it being 2 a.m. and black as pitch, he felt annoyed because he had been looking forward to seeing the desert sky at night with its myriad of twinkling stars seeping like the light of heaven through the black velvet pincushion canopy of the sky. He gazed upward, shook his head, sighing his disappointment. The rain was teeming down in swirling heavy squalls, diffusing the headlights of the car, reflecting them back into his eyes to such an extent he could hardly see 2 yards in front of him. He wanted to stop, but the next service area was nearly 50 miles away. Reluctantly, he struggled on, worn-out wiper blades swishing, streaking the windscreen, emitting a shush, shush sound as if vainly trying to calm the outburst. A bolt of lightning lit the sky, ripping the heavens apart like a piece of tissue, and in that split second he thought he spotted something out there, something moving, lurking in the darkness. He felt his blood run cold as once more he glimpsed the indefinable shape before it vanished back into the blackness of the night. The heavens rumbled, ruptured into an almighty crash of thunder, scaring him half to death. White-knuckled, he clung to the steering wheel, the old motor growling beneath the hood. A massive discharge of lightning marbled the skies, and he spotted it again. It seemed pale, ghostly, drifting in his direction. Another rumble followed by the roar of 1,000 wounded beasts, and the skies lit up again. This time, he could make it out. It appeared to be a woman, dressed in nothing but a white negligee, running barefoot through the scrub, her garments wet and clinging, her hair dark and matted, blowing across her face. He felt a strange sensation ripping through his body, and the hairs on the back of his neck stood on end. No, it's impossible. It couldn't be. Kicho, out here, alone in the middle of a storm. Surely he was mistaken. She was practically upon the car when the skies lit up again. Startled, he rammed on the brakes and the car skidded to a stop. It was Kicho. He could see her now, lit by the headlights, naked beneath her negligee, looking like a tormented angel. Her face, paler than he had remembered, standing, hand raised, as if bidding him to stop. She rushed to the passenger door. "Kicho, what happened to you? You're soaking wet. What are you doing out here dressed like that?" he blurted as she sat into the car. "I thought I'd never find you," she said. Her voice was soft, her breathing as calm as if she had just woken up. "My God, what's happened to you?" Slowly she turned to face him. Though he could not see her properly, something stopped him from switching on the interior light. "Sonny found out about us." Rory shook his head. "No, I don't believe that." "Yes, He caught us on video 2 nights ago in your apartment. He planted a camera in your bedroom. She turned away. He watched us making love. No, you must be mistaken. He hugged me before I left tonight. Lightning struck some nearby rocks. He could hear the hiss of sizzled earth. In that flash, an indelible image of her blood-stained face was imprinted in his mind. He froze in his seat. I have got to go, she said, opening the door. The wind and rain poured in. Keisha, wait! We've got to get you home. I am at home, she whispered. I'm with the spirit of the Hopi. The door closed and she was gone. He rushed from the cab, blinded by the rain and battered by the wind, calling her name. Keisha! Keisha! Wait! Wait! Where are you? Dazed and confused, he returned to the car, biting hard on the knuckle of his index finger, trying to make sense of what was happening. Reaching for his cell phone, he dialed her number. He could hear it ringing out. Then, to his astonishment, he could hear the phone ringing within the car. Spinning in his seat, he frantically searched for the cell phone. It sounded muffled. At first he thought it might be amongst his belongings, but soon he realized it was coming from the depths of the trunk. The phone switched to voicemail. Hi, this is Keisha. Sorry I am not... Rory dropped the phone, grabbed the keys and a flashlight, and rushed to the back of the car. He tried opening the trunk, but the key did not fit, nor could he force it open. Frenzied, he reached into the back of the car and began tossing his possessions onto the passenger seat. Soon he was lifting the seat and tossing it out into the storm. Manically, he began to pull on the backrest. It snapped from its anchors. Grabbing the torch, he directed the light beam into the trunk and recoiled in horror. Keisha stared blankly back at him, her brown eyes unseeing, glazed in death, her hair matted and congealed with blood. In her gaping mouth, a blood-stained silver boding ball. For a moment, he was paralyzed, unable to move, unable to breathe, unable to think. Lungs almost bursting, he now gasped for air and began to hyperventilate, sobbing like a child. It was only when his eyes strayed from the body that he noticed the petrol cans wired to a digital clock. The alarm was set for 3 a.m. He glanced at his wristwatch. 2:52. Rushing from the car, he opened the passenger door and grabbed his rucksack and was about to run away when he spotted the Kachina doll resting on the seat. Snatching it, he slapped the door and ran away. He had scarcely managed 300 yards when he heard an explosion. A fireball rose high into the night sky. He stood, dazed, watching in disbelief, tears mingling with the rain, the horror reflected in his eyes. Distraught, he began to walk through the deluge, his eyes shut, his mouth gaping, sucking in air and water in equal measures. Shattered, he fell to his knees. Keisha, he cried. Like some divine intervention, the rain began to wheeze. He could see a break in the clouds and a silver shard of moon peeping through. Something caught his eye. He dropped his rucksack. Keisha, he called out, is that you? A warm wind swept over the plains from the south, whistling eerily through the dark valley. In the distance, he could hear the fading thunder. Rising to his feet, he took a deep breath, clutched the Kachina doll tightly and gazed upwards upon a canopy of twinkling stars. Exasperated, he ran his fingers through his sobbing hair and called out once more, Keisha! Keisha! Where are you? He heard nothing but the echo of his own voice reverberating as it faded down the valley.
Please tune in to our next episode.